for the future work sessions, we won't be discussing specific amendments there either.
We weren't going to be editing the specific policies, but I think the function of these work sessions was to get ideas on the table and confirm interest in certain amendments so that we can work with you and then bring that language back. At some point, the council will have to vote on amendments and specific
language.
So
just to address Commissioner Fish's concern, one thing I've come to understand or be reminded about is all of the policies in the comprehensive plan are intended to say, do this. But they all say, do this. So there's the council is then responsible for balancing with the available resources which ones we can actually do at a certain time. As long as and I've actually gone through the whole comprehensive plan proposal and proposed taking out language that says ensure, because there's some cases that we cannot possibly absolutely require, especially entities that aren't the city government, to do something. And so then we need to promote whatever. So I do have an amendment on providing a level of funding and human resources allocated to the community involvement program sufficient to make community involvement an integral part of the planning, policy, investment, and development process. You will be seeing just very shortly a request that the Office of Neighborhood Involvement Budget Advisory Committee agreed to further to us for this budget's consideration on expanding the Public Involvement Advisory Committee, and actually with a focus on housing and outreach on housing and affordable housing. And that's funded with the overhead model, and so it's going to be something that we'll be considering in this budget process. But I think it's then the responsibility of whoever's the commissioner in charge to do the part, to further the parts of the plan that we have bureaus that are responsible for, and then the council always has the responsibility to balance the budget each year.
I appreciate Commissioner Fritz's comment that we're going to try to be ecumenical in building in the directive so it applies to everything. What I want to avoid is a situation where some close reader of the comp plan says we were especially directive around five areas and silent on 10, and therefore we were signaling that those are more important because I think that could then become a complexity in a land use hearing.
I'm told that there was almost endless discussion in the Planning Commission about the verbs and the strength of different policies to try to make sure that we have a balance. And certainly in my amendments, I wanted to make sure that I tried to honor and respect and in some cases improve those. So I want to address the issue of neighborhood associations are still the foundation of our community involvement structure, along with our diverse civic leadership partners and other community organizations like the East Portland Action Plan that we recognize. So I'm going to be proposing some minor amendments. I think they're minor, but they're significant. Just the capitalizing of the word neighborhood associations emphasizes that it has a special meaning. Whereas neighborhoods, there was a proposed amendment from Tracy Prince. In some cases, the neighborhood association corresponds with what people consider their neighborhood. In other places where the neighborhood association line may be down the middle of a street like Division or the West Portland Town Center, people consider their neighborhood beyond their neighborhood association boundary. So I have some clarifying language for that. It's very important to change from citizen to community involvement. We heard some testimony about that and some concerns. I was involved in our community before I was a citizen, and a citizen has a special legal meaning you're entitled to vote in the United States of America. On my website, I use the word citizen with a Y, citizen, rather than. It can mean all the residents, businesses, people who pray and play and pay taxes here. It's not always used in that context. So using community, I think, also fosters a sense of community that people can define their own communities, and few of us are in just one, that we have many. And that's important to recognize as part of the comprehensive plan. I want have a few small changes to emphasize that we don't just want to get information to people and get information back from people. We actually want to consider that information in making our decisions. So, and that also requires significant investment. I have an amendment on the Planning Commission chose to have language that said maintain and coordinate land use engagement with communities of color, low-income populations, limited English proficiency communities, Native American, and other underserved and underrepresented communities. They also list out a number of those other communities. I'm proposing to add African Americans as another historically marginalized community along with the Native American community. We certainly have had an appalling history since our founding as a state and before that of discrimination against people of color and people who are other in some way or another. The Native Americans and the African Americans who've been here for centuries are amongst those who are still the most disparately disadvantaged and systemically disadvantaged. And so I think we should add that, and we certainly heard testimony to that effect at the SCI hearing. There is an amendment in this policy 2.11, open data. I want to explain a little bit the amendment I'm proposing on that. It's about data collection and sharing, and there was a lot of language from the Planning Commission about exactly how to do that. And I'm proposing to delete that because what we need in the comprehensive plan is the broad policy. So with respect to your previous discussions about the incentive zoning and such like, perhaps as long as we have a specific language that directs that to happen, that might be enough for the comprehensive plan. And knowing that the Planning Commission is going to get us their proposal on specifically how to do that within 6 months or whatever might be acceptable. I'm certainly interested in seeing how much faster we've done. But on things like open data, especially open data, where what's state of the art today may not be the state of the art in technology in 20 years, and in fact, quite likely will not be, I think we should be stating the policy intent rather than how to do it, and then have administrative rules or something else that has more of the details. And I think that's the majority of my more substantive suggestions on it. Thank you.
We can move on to the last topic then, and that is to
one more thing. I just like a head nod from my colleagues. There was some consternation. One of the newspaper outlets had some suggestion yesterday that the city was planning to completely do away with neighborhood associations or make them way less important. And so the intent of the council is not to do away with neighborhood associations.
I think that's
thank you, Mayor.
Rumors of their death have been greatly exaggerated.
Okay, we'll switch topics now to looking at the Portland Harbor and the commodity forecast and ask Tom Armstrong to come up. We've spent a good bit of time over the past couple months looking at new information, looking at the numbers, agreeing and discussing the numbers and getting them to a point where we think we're feeling very comfortable with the forecast. So we just want to outline where that is. And some of you we've talked about this with, but wanted to make sure that you all hear the same thing at the same time.
Okay, so this relates to the economic opportunities analysis in the EOA. And we heard a lot of testimony. I'm Tom Armstrong. I'm a supervising planner with BPS and have been overseeing the preparation of the EOA. And as part of that, the EOA is state mandated. We need to demonstrate that we have an adequate supply of land to meet our forecasted economic development needs. Our approach to this has been to sort of split that need into two pieces, one related to job growth and one related to sort of traded sector cargo growth, because that the growth of those commodities tends to be more land extensive. If you think about big areas like the port or the marine terminals, lots of land area needed to move goods around, lower job density. But also that what we've seen in trends is the commodity flows don't exactly track with job growth because of efficiencies and automation and improvements like that. So we broke out the traded sector cargo flows separately to determine that land need. And the biggest component of that was related to the marine cargo forecast. And we heard a lot of testimony. When the PSC looked at all of this, they came up with a recommendation to use the low cargo forecast for the next 20 years. And that was mainly based on sort of two factors. One is they wanted to match the forecast to the available supply. Again, we can't choose a high forecast and create this huge shortfall and still meet the state requirement to show that we have an adequate supply. One of the big things that factored into the PSC recommendation was an underlying assumption that West Hayden Island wouldn't be up and running and operational by 2035, that where we are in the process and everything that it would take, even if we restarted today to get the approvals and to get the construction underway, it seemed reasonable to think that it wouldn't be up and running in 2035. So how could we achieve that higher forecast without that capacity? The other was wanting to make reasonable assumptions about the types of marine terminals that we're having, that you, without West Hayden Island, you could achieve a medium forecast with a lot of reinvestment, more intensive marine terminals, but then we get into facilities like having parking structures at the auto terminals and that sort of thing. And at that time, when what was in front of them, that seemed like a very expensive option that they didn't want to go there.
You mean parking for vehicles that are being
right
imported?
Increasing the capacity. The big constraint on the auto imports and exports is where do you store the vehicles while you're waiting to get them on or off the ship, and or on and off the train. And so one way is to go up with that. But that's, you know, as we know from the mixed-use discussion, that's an expensive proposition. I think what we heard in testimony is both sides of the issue, a lot of support for this low forecast scenario because it emphasizes intensification and redevelopment of brownfields and getting more out of our existing base. We also heard a lot of concern about the message that the low forecast sends in terms of selling the harbor short and not wanting to support the expansion of those traded sector businesses, and a desire to sort of find a scenario that sort of shows that medium cargo forecast growth that the port and other businesses thinks is out there. For us, for as staff, one of the key sort of pieces of testimony was from the Port of Portland, where they've documented that over the last 5 years, while we've been at this, a number of different investments our existing marine terminals that has expanded the existing capacity, which is pretty key to the methodology and how we figure out what our future needs are. Those investments actually represent a 20% increase in the existing capacity of the marine terminals. And so we use that as a starting point to look at a new medium scenario. We made two changes when we dug into the numbers and the methodologies. Is we actually made a change in our methodology and how we adjust. Most of the cargo forecasts out there are out to 2040, and we made a change in how we adjust that cargo forecast back to 2035, which is our planning horizon. And then we added in these new investments. And these are investments that are already on the ground. It's not something that's been announced and maybe it'll happen, but things like the Dreyfus terminal there in the Rose Quarter, that's up and running now. And so these are sure things. Money's been spent to make these improvements. And so we've added those in and accounted for those in the existing supply. And what is in the January 19th memo that was in your packet that Steve Kuntz, our senior economic planner, put together was a revised medium scenario that actually has a slightly smaller shortfall than the low scenario that was recommended by the PSC. We still have a 23-acre shortfall in sort of the harbor access land area, that land that is immediately adjacent to the harbor and the rivers. We think that is manageable because we've also seen evidence and examples of investment of areas immediately across the road from those riverfront properties as a way of expanding capacity. We've seen Everest Steel do that. We're seeing some of that in one of the examples from the port of auto terminals expanding just across the road. And so we think that although that's a small shortfall in the harbor access area, the overall industrial land category across the city has a slight surplus that we can offset with that. And so we think that works. Now, I will say that larger scenario is all dependent on the brownfield redevelopment investments, the freight investments, and some of the golf course land conversions. And we can get into that when we talk about those specific map changes in response to that testimony. But I think we have here for your consideration a medium scenario that works and that doesn't rely or doesn't point us in a direction towards sort of being forced to assume development of West Haden Island.
So maybe you're going to touch on this, Tom, but I was pretty struck by the cargo forecast numerically. I understand that as a percentage growth rate, you know, it's relatively modest, 1 or 2% a year. But when you look at those columns, I mean, it's pretty striking to go from 376,000 automobiles a year to 929,000. To go from a container volume of over 1 million containers in 2010, I would expect under 50,000 this year, to 1.9 million, and so on down the list. So can you comment on the realism of these forecasts? Yes, if you apply a 1 or 2% growth rate to a big number, it gets bigger. But how realistic is it to plan for a city that has 1.9 million containers going out of our port when essentially we have none now?
So just to clarify, the numbers here are all in metric tons, so not individual units. Yeah, the volume is. Right, and I think that is sort of, again, the way we do the forecast is, you know, and the port works with a forecasting firm. They look at sort of the West Coast region and look at what's moving through the West Coast and what Portland or what the lower Columbia River share of it is, and then slice it down to, well, what would be the Portland's share of that. And so in terms of those growth rates, I think just in, if you think of, you know, we're pulling commodities from the Midwest and pushing them through Portland and the lower Columbia River. And so you're really, it shows us as a freight hub that the sort of growth of the national economy and the focus on traded export as a way of sort of leveraging the multiplier effect for our local economy, that it is reasonable to look at those volumes over the next 20 to 25 years as just a function of the growth of our national economy.
Two notes I would make on that is the forecasts are long-term, and so it's almost never true that we're exactly right on individual commodities. What tends to hold up over the long term is the overall sort of trend. And when you look at data that have about the past performance, there is a long-term growth trend that is reliable. And this is within bounds. Another point to make on that is that particularly with containers, the container commodity business is not one of the commodities that's driving our land need. There's enough existing capacity at that terminal to handle the forecast. So we don't need to worry about whether that one's right, because it's not causing us to say we need any particular additional acreage. What is driving our forecast is more on the autos and the bulk and grain.
Tom, I have a slightly more technical question I want to ask you. And I'm reminded of John Muir, who said that everything is connected. And it's certainly true in nature, and I'm learning it's especially true in the comp plan. So the cover memo that you've given us says, blah, 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 the medium forecast scenario, a more realistic option without development of West Hayden Island. That seems to be the magic clause. So if the council agrees that a medium forecast is appropriate, does that then in effect create a legal mechanism to challenge any other determination we make about land, including keeping West Hayden Island out of our plan? Does it in effect, pardon me?
Yeah.
If we do low, if we do medium, there's an argument to be made either way. We could still have it appealed that we haven't used the right numbers either way.
Just put it as crudely as possible. Does a medium forecast make it more likely that other decisions we may make about industrial land in that area could come under attack and through a land use process be questioned?
I think what it does is just change the nature of the objections. If you adopt a low forecast, the objection would be that you inappropriately adopted a low forecast and that you weren't tracking with the facts that lead you there. If you adopt a medium, you are stating that, and that becomes then, assuming that holds up, that forecast then becomes the basis of the land need that you need to provide. And so then the discussion shifts to, have you provided that land need? So it depends if you want to argue about whether you've provided the land need or whether you want to argue about the nature of the forecast. Either way, there's legal objections folks could have on either of those courses that could affect land use in the harbor in the future.
Okay, but what do you surmise is the intent of the port and other parties in pushing for a medium forecast as opposed to a low forecast?
So I think it has been more about the positive, optimistic outlook for the future growth of the port, and not selling it short. And their letter that they submitted in January as part of their testimony, they clearly say that we think we can achieve the medium forecast with sort of the package that is on the table without having to look to West Hayden Island in the next 20 years. Yes. Yes.
So I think I thought that the analysis that was provided for the low impact was persuasive and could be defended. I think that the new analysis for the medium forecast is possible. When I met with members of the Working Waterfront Coalition earlier, about 6 months or so ago, I suggested we come up with language that said in the comp plan, it's medium and that's without anything like Hayden Island. So I think maybe there's a way, and there could be some more discussions on, we certainly value our industrial partners and our good jobs in the harbor and elsewhere. And is there, we heard a lot of testimony about how a medium forecast would help them in developing more and more good jobs in the current area. Is there a way to put language into the policy six that would make it very clear that whichever choice we're taking, it's without West Hayden Island?
So this really just comes down to whether the new numbers that we find compelling, that you agree with that. And if you want to have more discussion about how we got there and looking at the numbers for your own validation, we're happy to do that. It also does come down to, I think from the port's perspective, the importance of having policy to say that the port is open for business. And I think there was a bit of a obviously a marketing move here, and from the port's perspective, that if they're saying, no, we're just going to go with the low forecast, we don't need more, we don't expect more, that doesn't support them as they're out trying to raise money and resources and everything else to go in a different direction. We agreed with that from the beginning, but we didn't see the numbers to get them to the medium forecast. We now feel like that we do have, and that they have actually made on-the-ground investments. It's not just a wish list of things that they want to do.
Just for what it's worth, I agree with the new medium growth forecast that you're putting forward.
I'm prepared to accept the medium growth forecast, too. And one of the points the Working Waterfront Coalition made, which I thought was fair, is that the comprehensive plan as a whole is a fairly optimistic Democrat document. We're figuring we could do tons of neat stuff in all sorts of areas. So to be particularly dour on the Marine Corps cargo forecast seemed unnecessary.
I thought the January letter was a game changer. It laid out a sort of a middle ground for moving forward, where we were also able to embrace a shared value, which is we want the port to be very successful. We want a healthy working river, and the working river is a core priority of the city. So, to the extent we can find that middle ground, I applaud the port for pitching an idea that I think can change this conversation.
Trying somewhere in this comprehensive plan, so maybe it merits a matter of you meeting with the port leadership and others to see if we go with the medium. And as I said, I think either can have a credible case made for it. If we go with the medium, which we were told multiple times in testimony would be helpful, can we also get the assurance in the comp plan that West Staten Island's not included?
Just a clarification that the EOA report itself, which would include a narrative of this issue, is adopted as a supporting document within the comp plan. So that is, it does have the weight of the comp plan being in the EOA.
Also, I think as a technical matter, the port isn't the only party withstanding. So, well, I'm not sure we can bind others. I mean, I think at some point there are some things that we manage in life with handshakes and mutual understandings. Are the things we put in blood. I think we have to calibrate which, in this instance, is appropriate.
Other guidance or questions for Tom on this pretty important piece of the picture? Great. Thank you. Thank you.
I think we're done on time. Done. So we'll come back and before the next.
What time is it?
11 o'clock. Oh, we're ahead of time.
Right.
Yeah. Don't worry, we'll need it.
one just... order of business. I want to make sure I captured correctly the adjustments you made to the future agendas for these work sessions. I heard to move the employment down later in the sequence so that the February 2nd can be more about the housing topic. And I heard the middle housing topic, adding on to the middle housing, more innovative forms of housing in general, and your concern about where are we with the bonus structures as part of that. And then I also heard on the March agenda to be broader about the anti-displacement package rather than only about the community benefit agreement issue.
And just to beat a dead horse, when you publish the preliminary list of amendments and we start getting that omnibus package, what I'll be looking for is as to those amendments that you think are no-brainers or just technical fixes or things that really could go almost on a consent agenda item, You'll take those out. Those that have big policy questions, you'll help tee up what those questions are, and those that you vehemently disagree with, you'll let us know why.
Yes, and to put a point on the list-making aspect of this, we'll be making the rounds with each of your office this week to make sure we have an accurate understanding of your interests. I don't want to misrepresent anyone's list, so I want to make sure we get that correctly. The goal being to do that probably before the next work session so that we have a starting point there. Not necessarily to get to specific language, but at least, you know, to your amendment list, to at least have itemized those, which we have, and make sure that we've done that correctly so that we then can be in a better position of, as we go through each of these items, we can disclose which amendments lurk beneath the big picture and which amendments maybe are not in any of these sessions but are fairly straightforward and consent list in nature.
Thanks.
you all. Thank you very much.
I got your thing about, I guess, like 10:30 tomorrow. Do you have anything at 9:30? I'm actually going to be at the 1900 building from 8:30 to 9:30. But actually, I'll stick my nose over right in your office.
I'll go look at my calendar as soon as I get back. So earlier is better.
So yeah, earlier. I'm just going to be doing an ICAP thing at 9:30.
Okay. I'll see if I have something at 9:30.
Cool. Thanks, Rob.
Hey, Rob. Hi, how are you? Yeah, as soon as I've verified the accuracy of it, I'll just put that to our website and policies and map issues that that was the institution. I don't know how to put that. We have a placeholder for some of the new stuff and haven't verified.
Website, and then I had also been thinking about the horrible zoning provisions that we need to get. And I looked on the agenda and on the calendar, and it's still on your website. So there's no date. That's been the date for a long time.
I will check. We have changed that, so I'm going to do that. It should have been better.
Okay. I
looked
at it.
Yeah, I'll follow up on that. We settled that a few years ago.